This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Freakonomics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
Come on, guys, you gotta run! It's the Batman!
No, I'm vengeance.
I'm sorry, I've been thinking of that all day, every day, since I went to go see The Batman in theaters, directed by Matt Reeves, starring Robert Pattinson. I feel like this movie is supposed to have come out, like, you know, a dozen times by now. We were really supposed to get it a year ago. But I'm glad we got it irregardless, and I went ahead and saw it once with my family in Virginia, and then I went ahead and saw it a week and a half later here in Wisconsin, and I love it so much I wanted to go ahead and make it the entire theme for this month's Potpourri episode. But we can't do this without the one, the only, the defender of Gotham City in Mexico, Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, how goes it?
Bat hombre. I'm not sure the word for bat in Spanish, to be honest, but I'll find out. That'll be my homework. But yes, that, you know, that's, how familiar are you? How much old Adam West Batman have you watched, by the way?
Dude, I have not only seen every Adam West Batman, but nice. I own both of the animated Caped Crusaders animated films starring him and Burt Ward in Steelcase Blu-ray DVDs. And I also,
Steelcase, wow,
yeah, the Steelcase Blu-ray, yeah, the Steelcase custom art Blu-ray and DVD edition, and I have an Adam West plastic bust that sits on my mantle.
Okay, so familiar is
familiar is the answer.
Adam West will always,
dude,
be my...
I signed Adam West's memorial wall. They had a traveling wall that you could sign a message to Adam West after he passed, and I got to sign the wall.
His greatest role may still be Mayor West on Family Guy. Well, no, Batman's his greatest role.
Somebody's stealing my shits. This toilet knows something.
The Bat-Tootsie is what will be forever etched in my mind. I so vividly remember that. I think that might be what really got me into comics, the Bat-Tootsie. Everything else is just all fluff.
When you were a young lad, and I know you're coming into comics around the era of Frank Miller and everything, but was the popular persona of Batman the new Frank Miller Batman? Had that really become popular, or was it still trying to fight off the campiness of the Adam West years?
It was certainly becoming a grittier Batman, because it was right around when I got in the comics that they did the Batman broken back storyline, brought in Azrael. So of course Azrael kind of is what represented more of that 90s grittier edge. I mean, I wouldn't say Batman was seen as the Frank Miller Batman, but I think you could see signs that they were moving in that direction. Because even when Bruce Wayne comes back from his back, his broken back, he does, I feel like he has a little bit more of an edge to him after that too. Just, you know, the whole storyline coming back. So I think they're, in a way, they wanted Batman to somewhat match the tone of the rest of the 90s, where just every terrible thing was happening to heroes and they were just getting grittier and grittier. But I don't think it ever quite became like the Frank Miller version of the Batman. Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of old Batman from, you know, Dark Knight Returns. And maybe you're thinking more along the lines of a year one Batman. So and I think, yeah, I don't know. I think Frank Miller's rendition of Batman might still be like the most well known at the time and now most iconic. But I don't know if the main DC continuity Batman necessarily reflected quite that level of grit.
Yeah, I mean, I like to just really refer to, as much as Frank Miller deserves the credit for, as Rob Liefeld puts it, you know, basically creating the Batman everyone actually likes. It was this idea that he wasn't like, you know, the Saturday morning special Batman that was, you know, affable and like the campy dad stereotype to Robin, stuff like that. It's that, you know, he investigated grittier crimes. He had more violent villains, and that it could actually sometimes be, you know, suspenseful at times. It wasn't always like, you know, that Batman's going to solve the crime, unlike, you know, reading Superman, where you're like, nothing can stop Superman. You know, at the end of the story, Superman's always going to win. The bad guy's always going to go to jail. But speaking of which, I mean, I just want to go ahead and just jump right into the deep end of this. The Batman has been probably one of the most hyped films in a long time, most likely for two reasons. One, because we're putting out this movie, which is completely divorced from the DC Extended Universe plan. It was originally going to be written, directed, and starred by Ben Affleck. And then in around 2017, 2018, that basically fell apart, and that Matt Reeves was cast to direct it, and they were going in a whole new direction. And then, you know, with COVID, I think this was really supposed to come out about a year and a half ago, but COVID kept pushing it off. So we had DC Fandome 2020, which was so much fun. And basically all the things that Fandome promised would come a year from then. Most of it still hasn't come out yet. We're in 2022 now, and now we're only starting to get some of the content peeled off. But I gotta say, it lived up to the hype. I think I've seen a lot of people try and rank this in terms of where this falls in their Batman scale. And what I can say after letting the recency bias wear off is that as much as I really liked it, as much as I really think the cast was great and that Robert Pattinson really pulled it off, and I like seeing Jeffrey Wright and Zoe Kravitz as, you know, the leads, and Colin Farrell, like, my God, I didn't even know that John Turturro was in it, playing Carmine Falcone. I didn't see that coming. As much as I really liked it, people have been really trying to see whether or not it stacks up to the Christopher Nolan films, primarily Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. And what I can probably say is that for me, it's probably more akin to a movie like Joker. It was really good. It had some standout performances. But if I had to go ahead and say, you know, is it better than Batman Begins? I don't think I could say that. I still think that Batman Begins is an objectively better movie. I can't even say that it's better than The Dark Knight. I still think The Dark Knight is an objectively better movie. But is that to say that The Batman is lesser in quality? No. Is it lesser in the skill of the actors or the way the story was written? No. It's just different. And different can still be good. And I was happy with where they're taking things. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about a Gotham Police prequel series on HBO Max. I feel a little bit more optimistic about the Penguin spinoff they're going to do that takes place moments after the end of the Batman. But, you know, in terms of setting up a franchise, I think they did something really strong. I think they went back to their roots of, you know, Warner Brothers putting out good standalone superhero films. And, you know, overall, like, I was not disappointed.
All right, and that is a review of the Batman.
Goodbye, folks. Everybody, it's been
that was a hot start right there, just diving right in. Well, before I give any of my response to any of that, I'm going to remind everybody all the ways you got to be following what we're doing on Twitter at Second Print Pod, on Instagram at Second Print Pod. We have a Facebook page that we don't do much with, to be honest, but we do post episodes over there, facebook.com/secondprintpod. And if you want to get involved, if you want to hop over into the Second Print Fan Zone on Facebook, that's our private group for our supporters. You can join our Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod, where you got all sorts of incredible bonus content, including my current run through of the entire Ultimate Fantastic Four series. Remso, anything to add?
Patreon.com/secondprintpod. I do have one announcement. I made a post within our Facebook group, and I'm going to go ahead and send out another message to patrons, but I thought I might as well just cover it here because I know for all of you who are Patreon supporters, you're more likely to catch it through the show than, checking your phone and seeing the updates and stuff. Starting in April through probably August, for our $25 members and up, we're changing how we're doing shipping for your graphic novels. As many of you have known for a while, we usually partner with different stores, and I'll go ahead and negotiate a bulk discount so that way we can get you better quality books at a price that's fair for us, because we also have to compensate the cost of shipping. Now, because of a lot of stuff going on in the world still, it's become more expensive. So I can no longer go to the current comic book store I'm going to because of just business reasons. So what
because
I'm trying
Ukraine.
To yeah
because of Remso's support for Vladimir Putin
because of that comrade, yeah, obviously. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to call a couple local comic shops in the area, see if I can negotiate a better way to do business that's good for them and good for us. But until then, what we're gonna be doing is we're gonna be getting your graphic novels to you through Amazon. And I know some of you are like, well, you're always talking about supporting local stores. We're still gonna support local stores. The goal is to get a good deal with the local store so that way we could support local comic shops and keep the comic book community going that way, because Amazon gets enough of our money. We shouldn't give it more of them to it. But starting in April, if you're getting a book in April through the summer, you're going to be getting those packages through Amazon. And I'm hoping through August, maybe September, we'll have something taken care of. So just want to let you know, if you see a random Amazon package with a graphic novel inside, you didn't accidentally sleep order in the middle of the night, it's from Mark and I. So
especially if you're at the epic crossover level, just $25 a month, and every 3 months you get a hand selected graphic novel from Remso or I, as this young lad was just informing you of. So much fun, so much action over there on the Second Print Patreon, and it helps us because we can go to sleep at night knowing at least that we don't need to sweat the bills. We can afford to promote this podcast. We can afford the hosting, the website, all of that stuff. And we don't need to, sweat extra money out of our pocket. So it's a huge help. The more you guys put into it, the more we put in, because we're not making money on this thing. Let's be honest. Everything we get from you guys is going directly back into the show. So check it out. Patreon.com/secondprintpod. Now that we have paid the bills a little bit, or attempted to, give you my thoughts on the Batman. And
how many times have you seen it in theaters?
Just once.
Okay, so I'm still in the lead of two.
Disappointed.
Well, I mean, I was just really impatient. I know I said a week and a half.
Twice in the theater. Guy. I mean, I can't remember the last time. I don't know if I have.
Didn't you see No Way Home twice?
No, I didn't see it. Aww. I never did. We talked about it, but I never had it up happening.
Aw. Yeah, no, I know I said a week and a half earlier. Now that I think of it, by time of recording, it's only like been out for a week and a half. So I saw it two Saturdays ago, and I saw it this previous Saturday, so I saw probably like 6 days apart.
Fair enough. So did you, I'm curious then, did you like it better the second time?
I did.
Or
okay. I got to really pay attention to certain moments that I really liked, and I got to give moments that were a bit confusing a second look. And this is one of those films where, I mean, there's so much to cover in like a 2 hour, 50 minute runtime. And I think the one criticism that I think is kind of invalid.
It was 250. Did you say 15 or 50? Because it was almost 3 hours.
Yeah, I said 2 hours, 50 minutes. 5-0. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is the longest runtime on any Batman film ever. It's one of the longest runtimes that Warner Brothers has put out for a film. So, I mean, there's always so much to focus on. What I can say is that the one thing that I'll give this over, let's say, like The Dark Knight or even The Dark Knight Rises, my criticism of both those Nolan films, The Dark Knight trilogy, is that the first act takes so long to set up the story that by the time they actually get to the actual conflict, the whole movie basically changes. Because the first hour of The Dark Knight is actually not that good. You've got the really cool bank heist, and then it's Batman dealing with those Chinese bankers who are laundering money for the mob. And then it's not until about an hour in, when the Joker is introduced again, that it actually picks up. And same goes for The Dark Knight Rises. Like, the first hour of that film is just not very memorable at all. What I liked about this is
I
that
I know it's the least heralded movie, but for some reason I have a soft spot for it. Mostly because I just really like Tom Hardy's Bane.
Oh, I really like it too. It's just, you know, comparatively, it's not the strongest, but I think a lot of people are overly critical of it because of the ending, which I understand. I don't like the idea of Batman quitting either. But, you know, with this, with the Batman, from the first scene, they pick up the story. Like, there's very little setup, and I think that's to their strength. I think it's one of the strengths of the Tom Holland Spider-Man in the MCU films. You didn't have to do too much setup. You could just give a little bit of pretext and get straight into the story. And, you know, I think that's what the Batman did really well. But with that said, though, I mean, it's just such a long film. There's a lot that you might miss if you're not paying attention. And this time, I think a lot of things that I may have been a little bit confused about, definitely after the second showing, I was like, oh, I get it. Oh, I really appreciate certain parts some more.
All right, why don't we do this so we can talk about those things that you might have picked up? Look, we're what are we, 15 or so minutes into this podcast? Look, if you haven't seen The Batman yet and you want to see it and you don't want to be spoiled, why don't you go ahead and pause this right now and come back whenever you see it, which, you know, worst case is on HBO Max next month. And if you don't want to see it by then, you probably don't care enough and you'll probably just keep listening to this podcast. But this is your official spoiler warning. Spoilers are about to come. Okay, there. That was sufficient time to pause, I think.
We've done our due diligence for those.
I think so. I think we have, for sure. And I'm not really sure where to start. Where should I start? I'm just going to start with the basics. Let's start with the basics. Robert Pattinson, what'd you think specifically about him?
I think he was great. I think, you know, part of me still feels robbed of the fact that this should have been Ben Affleck's first solo Batman film. Part of me still could not let that up. But that's not like a slight against Robert Pattinson. I've been a Robert Pattinson supporter for many years. I think it was really unfair that people keep...
Since the second Twilight movie.
more like, actually, like the one film where I watched him in it and I was like, this guy's actually a good actor, was a film with, I forget what her name is. The lady from Legally Blonde. What's her name?
Reese Witherspoon?
Reese Witherspoon. He was in a movie of Reese Witherspoon called Water for Elephants. It's a drama with Christoph Waltz. That was a movie that I had to read the book for, and then I went and saw the movie, and I was like, this guy's actually a good actor. And he's done a lot of stuff between Twilight and here. It's been almost 14 years. I actually really thought he was fantastic in Tenet. I think that was one of his better performances. So I knew when he was cast about 2 years ago that he was going to do a good job, especially with the way the story was, of this being a blend of Batman Year One, Batman The Long Halloween, and even elements. I haven't heard anybody else throughout comic book entertainment talk about this, but they actually took a lot of inspiration from Batman Earth One by Geoff Johns. So, you know, I think Pattinson did great. I think, you know, Ben Affleck is still going to be my favorite Batman. And I think it's going to be a little bit unfair for Pattinson because now he's going
Affleck
to be...
Affleck is your favorite Batman?
Well, I was about to say, like, you know, I think the best Batman is probably Michael Keaton. I don't think that's really much of a comparison, but
come to your senses here.
But you know, in terms of like people I want to see more of, it's like I don't want to see Michael Keaton really as Batman in the upcoming Flash film. I think it'll be cool, but this idea that they're replacing Ben Affleck with Michael Keaton, I kind of have a problem with. And I also think that's unfair.
I don't know
if
that's necessarily true. I'm hearing things to the contrary, so we're gonna see. I think it seems like if anything, they may both exist in sort of whatever show might or property might want to use one particular version.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see on that. But like, I think Pattinson really sealed it in. I do have some criticisms of his character, though, but I don't think it has anything to do with how he acted. Like, I don't like the one thing I really do not like is I don't like how he treats Alfred throughout the film. I think it's unwarranted. I think he's cruel. I think it's just it's out of character for the character of Bruce Wayne to be so antagonistic with Alfred, who's his only friend. That was the only issue I had of Pattinson, but I don't think that's him. I think that's just how this Bruce Wayne was written. Otherwise, I think he sealed the deal. I think he did a great job.
Yeah, I think for what he was supposed to be, he was stellar. Like, he was supposed to be the young but focused. Like, he's not young and brash, which, you know, year one or year two or whatever Batman in the comics in any iteration, Batman has never been portrayed as young and rash. So he was the right kind of young. He was just young looking, but still acting with that the sort of the poise and the forethought, the diligence of the Batman we know, but prone to some mistakes because he is still a young Batman. And I think they really did a really good job of straddling that line. Like, particularly since we're into the spoilers now, I really like how he really didn't get the Riddler's mysteries. Like, he really didn't get the riddles at the end. And I really did enjoy, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank.
Paul Dano.
You pulled one through for me, Renzo. I don't know if there's been, I haven't read a whole bunch of other opinions about this, so I don't know what the general opinion of Paul Dano's Riddler is. I really liked it because what kind of Riddler are you going to do to fit the tone of this movie? You can't have the Jim Carrey Riddler. As much as it's, I love it because it's terrible and absurd and amazing all at the same time, but you can't be corny like that in a movie. It just wouldn't fit. You wouldn't even be able to use the character. So I really think that his adaptation of the Riddler as this basically, you know, delusional genius sort of who thinks he's helping Batman in this to stop all these criminals in Gotham City, helping Batman and thinks that Batman is aware of this, thinks that Batman is getting that all his riddles actually just point to like their partnership and point them to do certain things together, and thinking the whole plan came together. I just really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed the way he portrayed this Riddler character. It's nothing like any version of Edward Nigma or any other Riddler we've really seen before. But it still fits, I guess it still fits the general thesis of the character itself. So I don't think they strayed so far from what matters about the character. You know, I think they kind of kept to that while doing a very, very different version. I will say though, the Ave Maria stuff, a little heavy handed.
Yeah.
Every time you see him, this song starts playing. So that I could have done without so much of that.
Yeah. I mean, that really goes to the testament of Matt Reeves when they told people that Matt Reeves was going to be scripting the film as well as directing it. I almost like all my worries about how they would possibly mess it up and everything kind of went out the door, because Zodiac is one of my favorite. It's one of my top 10 favorite films. I mean, a phenomenal cast, phenomenal writing, great performances.
You're not gonna like this, Remzo.
You don't like Zodiac?
I've never seen it, dude.
It's got Mark Ruffalo. It's got Robert Downey Jr. It's got Jake Gyllenhaal. It's got a fantastic cast. It's probably, I'd probably say like, and I like my Friday night routine is watch like a suspenseful crime thriller. It's probably my favorite crime thriller movie. And you see a lot of how the Zodiac was in that film in the Riddler. It also reminded me of one of my favorite Netflix shows, which was canceled. Did you ever see Mindhunter?
I have seen some of Mindhunter. Yeah, I haven't watched all of
Mindhunter was a show that was based on true events about the FBI finally setting up their serial killers division. And it reminded me a lot of how they profiled the serial killers. So, I mean, I think making the Riddler, you know, reflective of those real life inspirations, the Zodiac Killer, you know, BTK Killer, when he's like taping the mayor's face and, you know, stuff like that. I think that made the Riddler actually seem formidable and actually scary. I will say, and this isn't a criticism, but I think this is just one of those things where it's like, if you've seen Matt Reeves' other films like Seven with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, if you saw that movie Seven and then that scene at the end in which the Riddler is at Arkham and he's talking to Batman, one, I think that was when it was like, oh, Paul Dano's actually doing great, because throughout the rest of the film, it's like, you know, he's kind of there, but I don't really see him as anything like I don't see the motivation yet. When we actually see him without his mask on and everything, and he's showing how actually crazy it is, the only thought going through my mind that entire time, and I think maybe I'm looking too much into this, because he looks like another actor who I was thinking like, oh, this is, I feel like this role was written for somebody else. I think deep down, Matt Reeves wrote the role of the Riddler in this movie for Kevin Spacey.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. And then Spacey got depersoned.
Yeah.
So
like Paul Dano's a remarkable actor. But in some of the things that he would do and the way he would walk and the way that he would talk, and, you know, I looked at that and I'm like, that this is like, it's like Paul Dano is playing Kevin Spacey as the Riddler. Because, you know, Matt Reeves also wrote Seven, and Kevin Spacey from the movie Seven, who was a serial killer, is a lot like how he wrote the Riddler.
Yeah. I mean, now that you say it, I can totally see that.
So, I mean, I think all the strengths in this film came from the fact that Matt Reeves really knew what he was good at, but he also really respected the source material. I could probably say this and not have to think twice about it. Of all the Batman movies, minus maybe the first Batman film with Michael Keaton, this is probably the most accurate to the source material.
Yeah. I would say so. I mean, you could make an argument for, man, I'm blanking on a lot today. What's the first Christopher Nolan movie?
Batman Begins.
Batman Begins, duh. Yeah.
Batman Begins did, but it made a lot of changes. A lot of small changes, but a lot of changes to be noticeable.
You could argue for,
yeah,
it, that's all I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely the kind of Batman we've never seen on the big screen. And I think that's what I like most about it, is just how, like you were kind of saying, I don't think it's my favorite portrayal. I know it's not my favorite portrayal of the character. Batman, Michael Keaton cannot be defeated in my eyes.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson, at least, is a far better Batman than Christian Bale. I think I loved everything about the Dark Knight trilogy except Christian Bale. I don't know why. It's just like, I don't like him as Bruce Wayne. I don't even really like him as Batman. You know, I think he's the worst part of The Dark Knight. If I had to criticize any part of The Dark Knight as the movie, it would be that I wish they had gotten another actor to play Batman.
What, you don't like Christian Bale's Batman voice? You don't like it when I just make a voice like this when I'm Batman so that no one knows who I am?
I don't like anything about his Batman. I love everything about that trilogy except him.
Yeah, I mean, I did like Christian Bale's Batman, and I did love the trilogy. I love it as a trilogy, but it doesn't have the same level of grittiness, I guess, the true darkness. Like, I mean, this is a dark film. I'm not sure if there was a single scene that took place during the day. So it had more of that. I think this had more of that, really, like, that Frank Miller vibe to it. You know, more of that. Now, seeing the dark underbelly of Gotham City, of what it really is, getting into less of the flashy superhero-y Joker type stuff and more into, you know, the crime and the connections to the politicians. And normally, you know, in superhero comics, when I get into that stuff, it's kind of like, it's sort of boring to me sometimes, because it's like, well, I'm in this world with superheroes. So, you know, how exciting is it going to be, this drama between a police chief and this and that? But it really did work. It always works for me in Batman, and it really does work in this movie. And I'm glad they didn't go over the top. And of course, at the end of the movie, we got a little tease of an old friend, I guess you could say, yet another iteration of spoiler within the spoiler alert, in case you only watch half the movie. I don't know, but there is a very strong tease. I mean, they show us the Joker. Essentially, we see the green hair, we hear the laugh, we see the silhouette in one of the final scenes where we see Paul Dano in Arkham Asylum. So, and he makes a friend who's quite obviously the Joker. That's one thing here. They teased a lot in this movie. They teased so much that could be used to set up, you know, future movies. So I'm not sure what the plan for this is.
It didn't feel like sequel bait, which I do appreciate.
Not sequel bait, right, but more just like little seeds that if you're looking for them, well, I don't know. The Joker was definitely sequel bait. Come on. I mean, that one did. But everything else, I think it was more like things like, for example, I love the scene in the end where Batman is finally kind of like getting his ass kicked. And then he pulls out the, pulls out the syringe and stabs himself and gets all
so
jazzed
hardcore.
Up. And, and it's clearly Venom. And he's just losing his shit on this guy. And he almost decks Gordon and then finally, like, snaps out of it. Like that Venom rage was like so out of nowhere. Maybe I missed it. Maybe you caught it a second time. Was there any tease or hint of that at all? Because I don't recall when it felt.
I think a lot of people are quick to say it's Venom. I understand why people would think that. I actually don't think it was Venom. I actually think it was an adrenaline shot, because it's not that it
just regular old adrenaline.
I mean, it's not that it made him stronger. It's just that it gave him that boost, because a moment ago he was like lying on the floor, like concussed and everything. And now he suddenly has the energy to go and attack that guy. And he quickly, gets out of it when Gordon shakes him off.
Wasn't it green? That's why it was
green.
Obviously
it was something, but I think you're in a crowd of a lot of people saying, oh, look, it's Venom. I think that would be a weird change in the source material. Two, I think they would have been a little bit stronger in the tease of, oh, maybe this is something else. But I think it's more like...
But why do it then? Because I don't feel like it... I mean, I thought it was a really cool moment. It's actually one of my favorite moments in the movie. But I don't know why it was essential for the story, if not to tease that it's Venom.
So, and this is why... And this has nothing to do with the movie, but here's why I think it's adrenaline. Okay, there was a Spider-Man comic, like, 10 years ago I read, where it explained how Flash Thompson... went to Iraq and lost both his legs in the Marines. And then later
this must be Ultimate.
No, this was regular Spider-Man. This is how.
They upgraded it. They, updated the timeline.
Yeah. Like, in the comics originally, Flash Thompson went to Vietnam. Well, obviously Flash Thompson can't go to Vietnam because the story moves in modern times. So he went to Iraq, but this time he went to Iraq and he lost his legs. But during that, what it shows is that a bunch of Al-Qaeda fighters were basically getting hopped up on adrenaline shots to go fight the Marines. So Flash Thompson gets shot a bunch of times, and as he's in this hideout where a bunch of these terrorists were, he basically took a shot of adrenaline in order to get himself and also drag out one of his friends. So that, and watching that kind of reminded me of that. It's like, that type of stuff.
Yeah, but this is more than just energy. This is like a rage, like Batman was like, raw. He was even.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new, like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Like screaming like, ah, so that's why I felt it was more than.
It's also because he's seeing Catwoman get strangled. I mean, he's also angry. Wait, true, so, yeah. I mean, I understand why it's Venom. I'm probably wrong, but I think it was a shot of adrenaline.
OK, I want it to be Venom. Adrenaline just seems really boring to me when you can do even if we don't hear about it until like two movies from now.
Have you ever seen Batman inject himself with anything? I mean, even that was just like, wow, damn, like he's come prepared.
It really took me out. Like, I was not expecting that at all. I mean, it was really just, again, you saw a lot of things that you just haven't seen in Batman movies before. And that's what I liked about it. It was just a very different tone and a very different feel to the entire story. And I like that it was very much like a mystery. There was mystery wrapped up in this, and intriguing mystery about what really happened with Bruce's parents. Alfred's, what he knew about that, how that, you know, caused that strain in the relationship that maybe you didn't love, but I think that's why it was there, because of, you know, because of maybe Bruce blaming Alfred or Alfred blaming himself. They added the wrinkle, I will say. Is this, did they do this in Geoff Johns year one, where Alfred had this guilt because he was going to drive the Waynes that night, but then he didn't. He was like, I'm not
going. Yeah, and they actually, so that was in Geoff Johns' Batman Earth 1, and recently they made that canon.
That's what I meant, Earth 1, yeah.
Yeah, they made that actually canon in a recent Batman special, where they actually took it from Earth 1 and actually made it canon. Yeah, because this is supposed to be like the grizzle.
Why not? Everything matters. Everything matters. They can plug out anything and say this.
Yeah,
happened.
So like that is there. Speaking of which, one change I'm glad. Well, I don't know if it was a change or if it was just fan speculation, but like years ago, and it's so funny to say years ago, when they first revealed Robert Pattinson's Batman costume, the whole thing around the logo being the gun that killed his parents, you know, refitted to be the Batman symbol. I thought that was stupid. I thought that was just too on the nose. And a lot of people were like, oh, we're going to get to see how he eventually got the gun and how he took apart the gun to make his bat symbol. When they basically showed in the film that wasn't true and that it was also just kind of used as a knife to get out of things, I was like, oh, I'm glad that fan speculation was wrong this time.
Another criticism I have of the movie is there was really a confusing sort of inconsistency regarding Batman's relationship to the police. Like, he has a good in with Gordon. That was already established like prior to this movie. And I guess whatever their version of year one is where they became friends. And I'm good with that part of it. But it's like sometimes they're like, oh, he's a vigilante, go get him. But then other times he's allowed such access to the police station that he's in the room with them, like interrogating someone. And they actually like leave him with Gordon alone. That's how much they trust this guy who, like, in other scenes in sequentially, they are going after and saying, stop him because he's a vigilante. So I found some inconsistency there. Maybe you could explain it by just, you know, Gordon's influence and saying Batman's cool, maybe against the police commissioner who's not so cool with Batman. So maybe, but they don't really explain that. And to me, that just stood out. I was like, wait, so is he cool with the police? Do they like him? Or is he a vigilante who should be arrested?
I think they tolerate him, and he's only tolerated as long as he is useful. Otherwise, they feel compelled to arrest him because they don't know who he is. And he is a lawbreaker. I mean, that's why I always liked about Batman. It's like Batman keeps the DC universe grounded because, you know, all the other superheroes are tolerated in the DC universe because they have powers and because the governments of the world know that they really can't do anything about them. Whereas with Batman, he really has to kind of rule, you know, I say rule with air quotes, kind of rule through fear, because he is ultimately a human. And for the citizens of Gotham who have gotten close to him,
they
know that he's a human and that they can't tolerate just regular people doing shit like that. So I think it really comes down to, you know, this tolerance of him. And I think it really plays into Jeffrey Wright. I was so happy when Jeffrey Wright was cast as Commissioner Gordon. I think he's fantastic, and
he's great as the Watcher too. I love all these comics roles he's getting. It's a fantastic actor.
He's great as the Watcher. I mean, I've liked him since he was Felix Leiter in the Daniel Craig Bond films. I think you could give him that man any role and he's fantastic, but he really did kind of keep it grounded. I will say that with this film, I thought we were going to see more Commissioner Gordon character construction. Mm-hmm. He was more of a sidekick in this film.
I could have used Gordon having an affair a la Batman Year One. I could use a little side story there, or coming home to his wife or his kid, you know, something.
In the Dark Knight trilogy, you know, Gary Oldman's Commissioner Gordon is as much of a main character as Batman. I mean, Gary Oldman's Commissioner Gordon didn't feel like a sidekick, whereas in this film, I think Jeffrey Wright, as much as I'm happy that he got screen time and that he got to be important to the story, he felt more like a sidekick than I thought they were going to have him be. Now, maybe it's because they're setting him up because he's going to be returning in the GCPD series on HBO Max. It's not even confirmed whether or not he's going to be in that. It's highly assumed, but
that's a prequel, you said. Is that correct?
It's supposed to cover Batman Year One, basically. If this was Year Two, this is this show is year one, and then Penguin takes
with a Batman.
Yeah,
is there going to be Batman in it?
What we all know. I think it's going to be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they're going to talk about him, but you're never going to see him.
Or maybe you'll see the cape once in a while. But yeah, they're not paying Robert Pattinson to come be in this show.
This is going to be like Gotham, where they spent 5 years hyping you up for the last two minutes of the last episode to see Batman.
I wanted to like Gotham so bad. I gave it a full season. I just couldn't do it. Mostly because I just don't like the guy that plays Commissioner Gordon, the guy from who I call the guy from the OC, because that's how far back I go. But he's still just the guy, and no one knows his name, and no one ever should.
Which is so ironic, because he played the voice of Batman in Batman Year One.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. Well, respect for that.
Which is so funny when he got cast as Commissioner Gordon in the live action Gotham show. But yeah, I mean, that's my only criticism. It's like, I wanted to see more of Commissioner Gordon. And I feel like, you know, the scenes where he was in, he was really just there as a support character in a very generic way. I will say with Zoe Kravitz, I didn't know what they really intended to do with her. I think she was fantastic. Fantastic Catwoman.
I am a fan, Remzo, if you know what I mean.
If anyone was almost exactly accurate to the source material, I can totally believe that she is the same Catwoman from Frank Miller's Batman Year One story.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Down to the look, the tude, the attitude, the whole package. What did you think of? Did you feel like it was too much tying her into, again, spoilers are coming, having her be the daughter of like Falcone and all that stuff? That seemed a little unnecessary to me, to be honest.
Well, I mean, that's from Batman The Long Halloween.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Is this the part where I have to admit I've never read The Long Halloween?
The Long Halloween's complicated sometimes. It's fantastic. I think everyone should read it.
It's one of those stories I've always just known about, and sometimes I see it. I just never read it.
You should watch the two-part animated film on HBO Max, Batman Long Halloween Part 1 and Part 2. They change it from the comic, but it's still really good. But I didn't know, I don't know if it's John Turturro or Joe Turturro. I know him as the Jesus from The Big Lebowski, but him is John Turturro. Yeah. Him as Carmine Falcone. I actually forgot that he was casted in this film.
I never knew he was.
So when I saw him there and everything, he was fucking intimidating. He truly like felt like a mob boss.
Like he felt more like the big boss. I mean, he kind of was portrayed as more of like the bigger bad guy than the Riddler. I mean, the Riddler guided the story and the progression of the story and was, you know, what Batman was dealing with the whole time. But in the background, it's like it still always feels like Falcone. I mean, because for the Riddler, Falcone was his big boss anyway. So Falcone was more portrayed as like the big bad to be taken down.
Yeah. And I mean, it was I've always liked the crime families, you know, Salvador Moroni, Carmine Falcone. I always enjoyed that they were included so much in Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. But I mean, John Turturro is Carmine Falcone was just fantastic. I mean, he never even takes off those glasses, which were ripped straight from the comics. I mean, he's just he feels like the most out of reach person in all of Gotham. And that's what makes him even more intimidating than Paul Dano's Riddler, who's crazy. It's like, you know, he did fantastic, which brings us to, I think, the person who like freaked everyone the fuck out in this film. Colin Farrell's Penguin. I was walking out of the theater with my father the first time watching it. And he was like, you know, I've never seen that actor in a movie. And I'm like, you've seen that guy before. That's Colin Farrell.
Yes,
and he's like,
have.
That's freaking Colin Farrell. If he does not get, if whoever put on his makeup and did his wardrobe and everything does not get an Oscar for best, you know, special effects makeup or something, then the whole thing is freaking rigged. Because Colin Farrell as the Penguin, as Oswald Cobblepot, was probably like the standout performance of the entire movie.
if I didn't know going in that he was in it, I don't think I would have known on my own that's who that was.
Jeffrey Wright didn't even know he was in the movie until somebody brought it up.
What? Did they not have scenes together?
They had scenes together, the pier scene, but...
And he didn't know who that was? Like,
He didn't know who that was.
They didn't, like, see each other in the green room or in makeup or something?
No, they were in different trailers and everything. And I don't know how he was able to do it without realizing he was in it. You know, in this case, it's almost more believable than Gwyneth Paltrow not knowing half the Avengers were in Avengers Endgame. Like, it's not like that. Like, this I could almost believe, because Colin Farrell only shot for a couple of weeks and then he was off. But I mean, it's like you said, there are very few performances in all of cinema history where I can say that an actor really lost themselves to their role. And maybe it's just because he was wearing a fat suit and a ton of prosthetics, but Colin Farrell fucking owned it.
He might have forgotten who he was by the end of this thing.
I'm just a proprietor.
That must be so much work to get those. Like you said, that is some of the best. It's like, yes, it is obviously prosthetic.
They made a new person.
When you look at they created a new person, and you could almost not know it's prosthetics, at least more than like if this was 20 years ago. Like, yes, you know, but it's done so well that you could forget. You can realistically forget in the context of the movie that it's prosthetics, not like, you know, Danny DeVito's penguin just looks ridiculous in Batman Returns. Like, it's very obvious that he's made up here. Whereas this, at least, I like that it was a very realistic version of the penguin. You know, he's not like so incredibly deformed to look like sort of like in a cartoonish way. He was just sort of, you know, just had a weird enough walk that it made sense that they kind of called him the penguin. His performance is great, and I am, of all the things coming out of this, well, I'm excited for potential sequels. We're obviously getting sequels here, but I mean, I'm very excited for that series. And you said you've heard that it takes place like right after the movie.
It takes place right after the movie.
Shouldn't he be going to jail for spoiler alert, killing Falcone?
He didn't kill Falcone. Remember?
Oh, no, that's right. He was about to.
Yeah,
he was about to, and then it was the Riddler. Yes, spoiler alert again.
Yeah, but basically, this whole movie was a setup for Cobblepot to basically become a Gotham City crime lord, and with the flood and everything, which is taken, I think, from Batman Zero Year, and I forgot to bring this up earlier.
Year Zero. Scott Snyder's version of Year One. Basically.
Yeah.
His update to Year One.
Yeah, like that was a lot of that movie also, a lot of that book, a lot of that story made it into here, obviously. I mean, another shout out to that. I mean, it's just another example of why this movie worked out so well. But, you know, they take a lot of aspects from Zero Year. They take a lot of what you kind of see from Batman No Man's Land in terms of them being cut off from the rest of the world, basically, because of the flood and everything, which you see a bit of in The Dark Knight Rises. Basically, what this show is going to do, if I have it correctly, is it's going to be more of The Sopranos in its theme. Because it's going to show the Penguin now filling the power vacuum left by the fact that now the mayor, the mayor's first day on the job, the whole city goes to shit. The Gotham Police Department doesn't know who to trust. Batman is running around scaring the shit out of everyone. The Riddler basically got everything he wanted, minus, you know, more casualties and destruction. And Carmine Falcone is dead. So this is Penguin's opportunity to actually seize power and become now the new big crime lord, because so much of his competition is just either dead or substantially weakened. And whoever controls the guns and the money gets to control Gotham.
Indeed. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that one. So, and then let's see, who else should we talk about in this movie? I think we've covered most aspects of it. Who's any other actors we got to touch on? We touched on Paul Dano a bit. Do you agree with my assessment of his Joker? I would give it like Riddler. An 8 out of 10. His Riddler. I do think some of it, like the Ave Maria song just always being there, and then him singing it like a madman, felt a little hammy, a little over the top for me. But the rest of his portrayal,
there's a video that people could find on YouTube, and it's 30 minutes of Paul. This is literally the title: 30 minutes of Paul Dano's Riddler screaming "No" and "Ah." No.
I did like that twist when he realized that Batman wasn't his friend. That because he's living this entire delusion. Well, it's not a delusion because he was really taking down Gotham's crime family. But this whole time, he thinks he's leaving clues to help Batman to eventually capture everybody and eventually to get him in the right position to kill Falcone. But this whole time he thinks that Batman gets it and he thinks that Batman is obviously working with him. So I just loved that reaction though, because that was great. That was the kind of reaction of someone who's, I don't want to get political, but it's that you've seen the video of the people screaming after a certain someone won an election some years ago, and it was the same reaction. It's your reality falling apart. It's the realization that everything you thought you knew about the world is completely wrong, and that either you've been lied to about it or you've created this delusion for yourself. And I don't know which one is scarier, but either way, that's what he was processing, and that's what he conveyed so well with that scene. So that made up for the Ave Maria over the top nonsense to me.
Yeah, I think it's safe for us to get into grading. What do you say?
I think so. I'd say so. We can talk. Let's do our grades, and then I want to talk potential sequel sequels.
Let's
grade it first.
We'll rate this different than how we rate books. I think in the past for movies, we've just done a straight 1 to 10 scale. I feel like I should give it higher, but. I think it's kind of fair with this, because if we're just talking Batman movies, I think The Dark Knight is a 10 out of 10. And I think Batman and Robin is a steaming zero. I'm going to give this an 8.5. I thought it was excellent. And it's a really excellent Batman movie. But I think if I'm in the mood for Batman, I think I'm going to go watch The Dark Knight trilogy, or I'm going to go, pull up Zack Snyder's Justice League or Batman versus Superman, watch Ben Affleck. It's not that it's not good. It's just that, in comparison, in terms of other Batman films and other Batman actors and stories, a lot of this is stuff we've seen before. We saw it in a completely different way here, but a lot of it had been set up in the Nolan films, which I think is smart, but it's better than The Dark Knight Rises. But it still falls a tick below Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. I would put Batman Begins as a 9 out of 10. I'd put The Dark Knight as a 10 out of 10. This is at an 8.5. It's still above The Dark Knight Rises, which I would give like a 7.
I think I mostly agree with you, although, yeah, I guess Dark Knight Rises for me is, it's like my Return of the Jedi. Because as far as Star Wars movies goes, I agree and will not argue that Empire Strikes Back is the best of the original trilogy.
True.
It is the best movie, objectively speaking. But for whatever reason, it's just when I watched it as a kid and what I like, because I love Muppets and Puppets and all that shit, and there's a lot of them in Return of the Jedi. So it's the movie that I kind of like watching the most. Not for really any reason I can logically defend, and I won't ever call it the best of those movies, but it's just the one I've always liked the most. I liked watching the most. And that is kind of how I feel about Dark Knight Returns. I agree.
Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises. That's right. It is definitively and objectively the least good of those three movies. And I would agree with your ranking of the three. But I think I just like it. I like if I'm going to watch one, here's what it is. If I'm going to pop one on in the background, but not necessarily be I'm focusing on a movie now, it's definitely going to be The Dark Knight Rises. Cause I just think that has enough. It's fun to me. It's the most fun to me for a number of reasons. I think a lot of it is the nostalgia of growing up and learning about Batman during Nightfall when he got his back broken, and seeing at least some aspects of that storyline brought to film in a really well done way. Now, we saw another version of Bane in a movie that we can pretend didn't happen, that you mentioned earlier, that Bane doesn't exist. But this portrayal of Bane was actually done so well by Tom Hardy that I just have a soft spot for it. But I agree with you on the ranking of those films. Anyway, I also basically agree with you on the ranking of this movie. I'm giving it an 8, and instead of an 8.5, Why? Just because that's the number I had in my mind, and I don't want to be influenced by your 8.5. But I pretty much agree with your assessment. It's a really good diversion, and you know, time will tell. You know, we'll see how I feel about this movie in 5-10 years compared to whatever other Batmans, Batflex, and other Keatons we've seen since then, or whoever, whatever other Batmans we get.
Well, I mean, think how spoiled we are, because between now and the next year, we're getting so many Batman on screen.
It's almost too much, but it's not, because I fucking love them all, and so it's not too much. I bring it.
People are like, how much Batman can you really consume? It's like, never enough.
Try me.
Never enough.
Exactly. Try me.
Before we start talking, you know, like potential sequels and everything like that, I mean, this does bring in the question. Would you rather see another Robert Pattinson sequel, or would you rather see Ben Affleck get a full solo movie for once? I would still rather see a Ben Affleck solo film.
What would you want to see in a Affleck solo film, though? Would you want to see, because I feel like I already got the apex of what a Ben Affleck solo film would be. Like, we already basically got him as Dark Knight Returns Batman going after, you know, in BVS. So I feel like
I want to see him fight Deathstroke, dude.
I want to see that too. So here's what I want. Here's what and this is actually somewhat realistic, maybe. I would like to see the Snyderverse restored, and I would like to see Batfleck continue in some alternate Snyderverse timeline that we just get as the Snyderverse timeline. And I'd also like to see Robert Pattinson in the Batman sequel. I'd also like to see if Michael Keaton stick around on something else. So whatever, give it to me all. I can't get enough.
That's
I want
fair.
Them all doing their own things. I would, of course, watch a Batfleck movie too. So I'm not, you know, you have to twist my arm.
I mean, if anyone's going to give us that, it's going to be Warner Brothers, especially if HBO Max right now, because that new Batgirl movie, which ties into all the upcoming shit after Flash and everything, that's going straight to HBO Max.
Oh, that's a movie?
No one knows what universe that takes place in, but they know that Michael Keaton's in it again.
Yeah, that's why I don't think they're going to have Keaton officially replace Batfleck. I think it's just like, okay, in this universe where this Batgirl is, or this whatever, Michael Keaton's that Batman in this universe. And maybe in some other universe with some other show or some other movie, some other guy's the Batman. Why not? Why the heck not? These guys are all great actors. They all deserve the paychecks, as far as I'm concerned. And I'll watch all of these things. So, and I think they know that too. It's crazy. I mean, there's got to be a point where the bubble bursts. I don't know when, where, or how, but it just seems like there's no limit to the amount of comic book content that can come out right now that will not just be completely absorbed and consumed at every level.
My only issue right now is just catching up with everything, because as we mentioned on our last Patreon exclusive,
I still have comics to read from 30 years ago.
I still have a fucking pile in front of me at my desk. Like,
you have your own fucking pile of recent comics.
Like, you know, my problem now, as we mentioned on the last Patreon exclusive potpourri episode, is just that I don't have time to watch everything.
I'm very selective, so I'm more of a reader than a watcher. I'll say that.
Yeah, I still got to catch up on Doom Patrol and Titans and Young Justice, and I don't know if I missed a Marvel show or not. I mean, it's there's just so much going on right now. What I will say in terms of this new Robert Pattinson, Matt Reeves, Batman trilogy is that they're really going for the heart of who Batman is in relation to Gotham. I think they really began to touch on that through the Dark Knight trilogy, but we're going to see more of that here. I would like to see the Scarecrow actually be more formidable as a villain. I think obviously they're bringing in the Joker next time because they just know it's gonna be instant money. I'm not really happy with the fact that they got the guy from Eternals to come and be Joker. Is that who that is? That's who it is. Yeah. I'm not really happy. And when they showed him in his little cameo in this film, his unaccredited cameo, I was not impressed. Like, nothing gave me like Joaquin Phoenix vibes where I'm like, I could see that dude's the Joker. Nothing screamed Joker from here. In fact, the guy who I think Cameron Mahone, who plays the Joker in the Gotham TV show, I mean, I think he's still probably one of the better actors to play the Joker in recent memory outside of oh shit, this is so embarrassing. Who played the Joker in the Dark Knight?
Joaquin Phoenix. No. That one I got.
Alexa, who played the Joker?
In the Dark Knight. No, Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. Yeah. Alexa, stop. Yeah. It's a late afternoon, folks.
Heath Ledger, you fucking moron. Yeah,
Heath Ledger, an American treasure. No, an Australian treasure. Okay, he was the world's treasure. You know, I mean, nothing screamed, I want to see this guy as the Joker, but if they could bring in somebody to play Scarecrow, I mean, that's my biggest criticism of Batman Begins. I thought how they did Scarecrow in that movie was not great, and I don't like the fact that they had him as kind of like a spoof character in The Dark Knight, and then when he came back in The Dark Knight Rises, I think it dwindles down how scary the Scarecrow really is. So I think if we're ever going to get an opportunity for like a full-on like Batman horror movie, I think we could get it in this trilogy if they could bring in the Scarecrow for the sequel.
I'd be totally down with that. Yeah. Any casting choices for the Scarecrow?
Oh.
Howard Stern? Remember when that one was rumored like 20 years ago?
So weird.
You probably don't remember. You're probably not born yet.
Shit. I have thought of it. And much like every other person that I've tried to mention tonight, I don't
John
remember.
C. Reilly as the Scarecrow.
No, the guy from Mindhunters on Netflix, the guy who played the lead actor on that.
Okay, I don't know his name.
But I don't know his name either.
That would work. That works for me.
But yeah, I mean, I could see him as a crane, as a Dr. Crane. I could totally see that.
Here's what I'd love to ultimately see. Whether it's in a second movie or a third movie, I'm sure this is going to end up being a trilogy, like at a minimum, I have to think.
He's already signed on for two more films. He's locked in.
Okay, well, there we go. I would like to see... So we got this, but we didn't get this. We got a great portrayal of Bane in Dark Knight Rises. I would like to see, whether it's Bane or not, and you can be comic accurate and keeping it as Bane responsible, I would like to see an Arkham overrun situation where it would have to be a third movie, I guess, because you have to introduce a couple other villains and then maybe a couple more in the third movie. So you maybe have like five or six villains that you know well and maybe a few others that come into the movie. I would like to see Batman have to run a gauntlet. Like, you know, run a real Nightfall type, like he has to like fight seven or eight guys and just gets broken. I guess you kind of have to do it. If you're going to do that, you got to do it with Bane, I guess. And then you could also tie in the Venom, and maybe even tie it in. Maybe that's how he gets through it. Maybe, you know, because you kind of introduced this Venom or this, you know, if you just say it's the
Batman becomes a drug addict throughout the film.
I like it. Yeah. Maybe he keeps using the Venom to try to get closer and closer. But, you know, eventually it just breaks him and whatever. And then, yeah, he has to fight back from drug addiction and also defeat Bane.
I mean, that is found in the comics in the Batman Venom story.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I want to see that. I want to see that adaptation. Now that they tease that, like maybe they don't need to go full on drug addict with it, but I think they could tease a reliance on it. You know, maybe he realizes, oh wait, I can sleep even less. You know, I can cover even more ground. I can do even more and just drives himself to the ground. I'd like to see some version of that Venom storyline brought in, and I'd like to see some version of Nightfall, because in Dark Knight Rises we got Bane, but we didn't get what I love about Nightfall. What I really love about Nightfall, it's not necessarily Bane, although I do really like the character of Bane.
He's in a fucking pit for half the movie.
Yeah, he's mostly in a pit. But I really like, yeah, in the comics I really love that gauntlet, like Batman having to run the gauntlet of all of his greatest enemies, and I would love to see some big screen adaptation of this. So maybe the sequel could introduce, obviously we're already getting the Joker. You could, you know, we typically handle two villains per series here. You already get the Joker. Maybe we'll get the Joker and the Scarecrow. And then we've already seen the Penguin too. So then by the time you get to a trilogy, you got all the classics. You got Riddler, you got Joker, you got a Scarecrow, you got a Penguin, and then we could toss in a couple more and have Batman run that gauntlet, have Pattinson run the gauntlet. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. If any of the actors could pull off like a real like psychological and physical story like that, in which Batman's just getting his ass beat the entire time, it's Pattinson.
Yeah, I could see him getting his ass beat and doing it very well. So for that reason, yeah, I'm definitely a fan. So yeah, this was actually this month's, or our bi-monthly potpourri episode, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, but we felt this month it made sense to just dedicate that to looking at this movie, because, you know, we've been reading some things. We'll talk about that eventually, but every other month, we do a potpourri episode for our patrons only. So there's one up there now from about a month ago where we talked about all sorts of multiversal type things in both the comics and the movies. And of course, our patrons will be getting another one in just a few weeks now. So stay tuned for all of that by signing up for our Patreon. Patreon.com/secondprintpod, where you get all sorts of wonderful goodness, including early access to all these episodes. You might be now listening to this early if you're a patron. You could already be listening. You might already be listening. Depending, man, I'm caught in the time warp now, Remzo. I don't know. Point is, we could use your money. That's the point. Remzo, take us home.
Folks, as always, you might not be vengeance in Gotham City, but you can do one thing, and it's very simple. You can read comics and change the world.
And change the world.
Good night, America.
Adios.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.